Cape Verde. Population 570,000 people. An archipelago of Atlantic islands off the coast of West Africa that most Americans could not find on a map without prompting. This nation just became the smallest country, by population, ever to reach the knockout round of the FIFA World Cup. Their path through Group H involved 3 draws, 0 wins, and somehow they advanced in second place. They'll face Argentina on July 3rd in Miami, the defending champions, the team Lionel Messi led to the 2022 title in Qatar. This is the kind of story that global sports exists to produce. A country of 500,000 people playing the best football team on earth in an American stadium in front of a global television audience, potentially 10 times their national population.
The contrast with the Yee Tampa concert story is interesting as a cultural juxtaposition. The Tampa Sports Authority cited First Amendment protections and contractual obligations in allowing the show to proceed despite a community petition organized by Travis Scott supporters. The legal analysis there is fairly clean. Concert promoters have contracts, venues have obligations, and the government cannot use its regulatory authority to prevent a performance based on content or community disapproval absent specific articulable safety concerns. The Scott petition didn't meet that threshold. But the episode illustrates the live tension between platform responsibility, which is how we discuss content moderation online, and venue responsibility, which operates under a much older and more settled legal framework.
The Alaska ballot story, which I promised listeners we'd explain, involves a challenger with the exact same name as Senator Dan Sullivan, who was disqualified from the August primary and then reinstated by a state judge. This is not a theoretical problem. Name confusion on ballots has affected races before, most famously in situations where candidates share surnames. Having 2 Dan Sullivans on an Alaska Senate primary ballot, one the incumbent U.S. Senator and one a challenger specifically using the same name, creates genuine voter confusion that the disqualification was intended to address. The judge ruled that the disqualification was procedurally improper, which means Alaska is going to run a primary where voters have to read party affiliation and other identifying information very carefully.
The Newsom billionaire's tax story has a political irony dimension that's worth acknowledging. The governor of California is calling for a national wealth tax on billionaires while simultaneously opposing California's own version of the same policy. The stated rationale is that a state-level wealth tax would drive wealthy residents to relocate. California has already seen significant high-net-worth outmigration, while a national tax would eliminate the geographic arbitrage option. This is actually a coherent tax policy position. The counterargument is that calling for a policy you won't implement in your own jurisdiction undercuts the political credibility of the advocacy.
The dialogue data leak and the Pentagon's investigation into it is a story for our security-focused listeners to track closely. Peter Thiel's secretive professional network, designed to connect national security, intelligence, and defense industry professionals, apparently exposed member records. The Pentagon's concern is that those records could be used to identify and target military and intelligence officials who tried to keep their affiliations private. This is the kind of breach that doesn't generate immediate financial losses or service disruptions, but creates long-term counterintelligence vulnerabilities that take years to fully assess.
Now, the what if we're wrong discussion, and I want to apply it to the AI bubble thesis because it's the single most confident claim circulating in financial analysis right now. Multiple credible voices, Grantham, Chinese hedge funds, Allianz's CIO, are converging on the view that AI-related equities are in a bubble that will correct severely. The consensus is compelling. Valuations are elevated. The revenue-to-investment ratio for AI is currently negative for most companies, and the hype cycle is running well ahead of demonstrated monetization. That's a strong case.
But let's steelman the opposition. What would need to be true for the bubble thesis to be wrong? First, the timeline assumption. Grantham's 70% decline scenario implies a correction that plays out over 1 to 3 years. But Japan's Nikkei in the 1980s, the dot-com bubble in the 1990s, and the housing bubble in the 2000s all ran considerably longer than the bears expected before reversing. If AI monetization is 2 years away from showing up decisively in earnings, not 5 or 10, but 2, then current valuations could be rational discounting of near-term fundamentals, not irrational exuberance. Amazon traded at absurd price-to-earnings ratios for most of the 2000s and 2010s. Investors who called it overvalued in 2005 were technically right about valuation and profoundly wrong about outcomes.
Second, there's a genuine possibility that the productivity gains from AI are being systematically underestimated because they're diffuse rather than concentrated. The economic impact of electrification in the 1920s didn't show up clearly in productivity statistics until the 1940s, a lag of nearly 2 decades, because factories had to reorganize their entire workflows to take advantage of electric motors, not just swap in the new technology. If AI is a general-purpose technology with similar reorganization requirements, the revenue models we're trying to project from today's data might be structurally underpowered.
Third, the DeepSeek story actually complicates the bubble thesis. If DeepSeek's efficiency innovations reduce the cost of AI inference dramatically, then the total addressable market for AI applications could expand far beyond what current enterprise pricing models suggest. Lower costs typically expand adoption, which can sustain revenue growth even as per-unit margins compress. The bears are modeling a world where AI costs stay high and monetization stays slow. A world where AI gets significantly cheaper while adoption accelerates might look very different.
So, what should listeners watch for as the signal that the bears are right? Watch capital expenditure announcements from the hyperscalers, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, relative to their cloud revenue growth in the back half of 2026. If CapEx continues at current rates while revenue growth decelerates materially, that's the signal that the investment is running ahead of returns in a way that can't be sustained. Conversely, if revenue growth reaccelerates in Q3 earnings released in October and November, and CapEx starts showing up in margin expansion rather than margin compression, that's the signal that the monetization thesis is working. The data will be there, we just have to look at it honestly.